Those who can do, those who cannot do it on the internet. FancyPantsGangsters.com.
It's the Fly Over Sky Show on the Fancy Pants Gangsters Podcast Network.
Yeah, yeah, this is King Django, and you're listening to the Fly Over Sky Show on the Fancy Pants Gangsters Podcast Network.
Flyover Show can be found at FancyPantsGangsters.com and MNSky.com.
The Flyover Ska Show. It's brought to you by MNSka.com, Minnesota's Ska community at MNSka.com, and the Fancy Pants Gangsters Podcast Network at FancyPantsGangsters.com. I am back with a special guest on the line. He's no stranger to this show, that's for sure. I think he's set some sort of record every time he's on it, because he's the most frequent guest we usually have is our pal, Sammy K. Sammy,
what up?
How you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm back in New Jersey for a couple days, dealing with this bitter cold that I thought I escaped forever.
That's right. For those who don't know, Sammy, who longtime New Jersey resident, has gone west. He's gone Manifest Destiny took him out to Los Angeles.
Right outside of Los Angeles, where it's warm and life is good, I guess.
What brought you out there? What caused you to pack up and head out to California?
I broke up with a girl.
You had to get as far away as possible.
I broke up with a girl that I was seeing forever, and I my parents are moving. They're leaving the house I grew up in. Basically, we moved into this house when I was like 9 or 10, and my older brother moved to Oregon. My little brother's living in DC, and I was talking to my dad like, what the fuck should I do? And he said, I don't know, go somewhere new, get the fuck out of here. So I thought about it, and I had a really good time the last time I was in California, and it's also where I felt like that if I moved there, I knew enough people that I'd be comfortable just going with like a guitar and a backpack. Mm-hmm. And so I called up some family out in, they're about a half hour north of Hollywood. Called up some family up there and said, hey, can I come in and move in with you guys, you know, and sort of get on my feet and see if California is the right place for me. And, you know, it's been about maybe 2 months of it, and I didn't want to leave to come home.
Yeah, well, you liked it out west so much that you didn't even want to visit back here in New Jersey?
I was really excited to, and then I got here, and it's like, well, like, I've been debating this in my head, like, that concept of what home is, and, like, I thought New Jersey was really home, and then, like, I haven't had my own bed in a long time, and, like, got like my own room and stuff, and it's like, well, maybe home is really where like my little man cave my little man cave is, and that's it.
So like on a more of a serious note, you said your family is getting ready to move. Were any of them affected by the superstorm, by Sandy?
I got some family out in New York that got affected. They were in Breezy Point. But my immediate family, like, you know, my grandma lost power. My parents had to deal with my grandparents for a couple of days. So I guess that might be the biggest casualty of the storm, right?
Yeah.
No, my immediate family was all good. Most of my friends were all good. I know a bunch of people that lost their houses in or are displaced right now. And, you know, they're getting there. They're getting back to where they were living. I grew up like basically in the woods of New Jersey, and like I grew up about 30 minutes from New York City. So, you know, which is a good hour and a half from any shore town. So mm-hmm. we didn't get hit that bad. I saw a couple branches down in the yard when I got back, but that was it.
Nice. So yeah, minimal damage from your immediate family. So
yeah.
That's so good to hear. I mean, not so many people were that lucky.
Yeah, my family lucked out for the most part.
Well, that's so now you're out in LA, and I gotta say I've seen you very randomly throughout the past couple of years. You've been
more than most. I've seen you more than a lot of cats, actually.
Yeah, you seem to be on tour with a bunch of different groups and bands, and I mean, I saw you with the Hub City Stompers on their tour. I saw you.
That was a fun show. That was with Agros, right?
Yeah. We all ended up playing sort of an impromptu. I mean, it was kind of last minute show at the Caboose in Minneapolis, and that was a fun time. Had you and the Hub City crew crashing at my place for a night, and that was fun.
They didn't want to party that night.
No, they did not.
They all got hanging out, and they all just went right to bed.
It was pretty funny because like the way that my condo is laid out for those that don't know is there's just kind of a big space. So it's a living room and kitchen. So where all the people that wanted to after party were kind of around my little breakfast nook. But like mere feet away is where the band was like sleeping on air mattresses and on the floor and couches and stuff. And like they went to sleep right away with earplugs in, and we were.
I went to bed. I think I'm not gonna lie. I think I stumbled to the floor. I think if I remember right, it was a very very late night.
It was really late, but like for whatever reason, the folks here in Minneapolis and that went to the show, they all were down to party, and it was kind of surreal because we were. I felt bad because we were awake and up and kind of loud and drinking and doing whatever, but the band all had, or for the most part, had earplugs in, so they just tuned us out, so the party went on. And then I missed you. You were on tour with Leftover Crack, I think it was last year. And then,
it was your birthday.
Yeah.
I kept trying to call you to get your birthday, birthday drinks, and you didn't answer, you jerk.
Yeah, I don't even know where I was.
It's your birthday. You're allowed to not know where you are.
Exactly. Yeah, so, and then most recently, when did I see you? You were on tour with the Slackers.
Yeah, I did that Slack tour.
Yeah. So, I mean, how did you get into this? How did you become Mr. Tour guy? How did you get into that? Where, I mean, there's been like four or five bands I've seen you going and touring around with.
I got the Leftover stuff on a fluke. I saw Aura posted on Facebook. They were looking for a driver, and I wanted to go on tour for a week. I just wanted to get out of the house for a minute. Up until recently, I'm a pretty working class guy where like, I was cranking 60, 70-hour work weeks as a baker in New York and up until I left on that last Slackers tour. And I just don't, you know, my free time, my vacations, for lack of a better word, are going on tour. And I usually end up doing these, like, odd jobs if I'm not playing. So, like, Leftover, I was just driving them. That's all I did. I drove them to the hotel and to the club and back to the hotel and to the next show.
Nothing wrong with being a wheel man.
Nah, you know, it was really fun. I had a lot of fun with them. I did, I think, two or three runs with them now. Short runs, they're always like a week. People like, I guess, hiring me because I'll do stupid things. Because like, I think I left Minneapolis. I went to Aaron Porter's house, slept for like 4 hours, and then I drove straight to New York.
Yeah, he was
by myself.
He was telling me that story. He's like, he was saying that you got up early or whatever, and all of a sudden he's like, yeah, well, you know, what you got going on? You're like, well, I got a couple pack of cigarettes and some Yoo-Hoo. I'm just going to drive straight to New York. And he's like, you're crazy. I mean, that's not what a normal sleep-deprived person does.
No, I think I've driven on my own across the country this year like 3 or 4 times now. Maybe more. I did at the end of that Hub City tour, like, they were looking, they were down a player both tours I did the tour. Both times I toured with Hub City, and they were just, you know, I was playing organ for them. And both times it was like, hey, you want to do this tour and you want to drive the van by yourself to New York. So, like, the HCS tour, I drove from Dallas straight. I did that one, I think, straight. I think I stopped for, like, 4 or 5 hours and slept in, like, in between Nashville and, like, Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Like, I did Dallas to there and then straight, like, you know, I slept for, like, 4 or 5 hours. Like, basically slept off the Red Bull and coffee kick and bought a pack of cigarettes and drove the rest of the way.
So, I mean, what about, like, driving, doing those long road tour sort of activities? What attracts you to that sort of thing? What's the best part about that? I mean, that's not something I would do. I'm not a big driving guy.
You find fun things to do that make it worthwhile. You know, granted, playing the shows and doing the tours are great, and being able to get on the road and meet new people and see old friends. But you get to do really awesome things like that HCS tour, the Hub City tour. On the way home, I found myself, like, Memorial Day, sitting in the parking lot of Graceland at sundown on the top, like, on the roof of the van, eating ribs from the best rib spot in Memphis, watching fireworks. Like, that's, like, one of those, like, things, like, you really did that? Like, yeah, that's how I spent that day. And that's one of my favorite days I've ever had. I literally spent, like, it's maybe like 10 hours or 12 hours in the van, and I drove listening to, like, you know, you always find, like, the bomb used record store, UCD store.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I went to Cheapo's and I bought like $40 worth of UCDs, and then I fucking just boogied. That's the leftover run, and, you know, you just sort of like, I think I did a lot of Springsteen on that drive, as always. But
yeah, Springsteen, like, seems to creep up with you a lot.
Yeah, he's haunting me. I don't fucking get it. Like, I just don't. What's up, Bruce? Come on.
Well, I mean, he's a Jersey man himself, and he's a poet in his own, I guess, in his own respects. And he's a working class guy, so I guess in many ways you're a little bit in that sort of shadow, in that sort of form, I guess.
But, I love to tour, really, in the end. That's really how I enjoy spending my days. This year was great. I did like 8 or 9 months out this year, and it was just awesome. And, you know, I find that if you can live in a van with just the, like, the comforts of a backpack, or a backpack and a messenger bag, or however much, like, I take as little as possible on tour. And, like, it's just how I choose to live. And I've learned so much and met so many awesome people that I don't want to give it up.
Yeah, I mean, what is it about traveling light and, you know, being minimal like that? I mean, what is it that really calls to you? Because it's really, to me, it sounds like a calling. If you're passionate about it, like this sounds like something that, like, you're like, wow, I belong here. I belong doing this.
It definitely, like, you know, I don't feel like people are born into doing things, or like, I don't feel like people actually write songs. Like, I feel like they come from the wood of the guitar. There are these ghosts hidden in the instrument. Like, same thing about traveling, like, you're either born with this will to be like a gypsy or a nomad, or, like, you know, a vagabond, whatever you want to call it. Like, it's all about how you are and how you, you know, I started touring young, like right out of high school. I was on tour, like, with, like, working, selling t-shirts before, you know, well before Forthrights.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I already had a good amount of miles on my feet when I joined Forthrights, that, like, I've always wanted to tour. I've had this itch to do something with music since I was young, you know, playing in high school, having these, you know, rock and roll dreams. And I found myself when I was of age to go, and even like looking at college, like my mother turned to me and was like, "You really want to go to college and go and like, I was going to go to art school. Mm-hmm. Like, you really want to go to art school, or do you want to go and chase this dream, this musical dream?" And that was like 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And I think I'm chasing it all right.
Yeah. Well,
I think I'm finally finding why I did or did not want to go to college, you know?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you're out in California now. And I mean, I'll tell you what, I keep talking to you and you keep telling me, "Oh, I'm like, just, you're banging out all this recording. You're just, you know, you're like, I had a few spare moments. So I'm recording with, you know, this new song and this other new song." And, you know, it sounds like you found some musicians that you really want to jam out with.
Yeah, at the end of the Skylights tour that I did this year, the Echoes of Kingston, I guess this is 2012 tour. Mm-hmm. After that, I was in LA for like 12 days or 10 days. And on the long Forthrights tour that we did, the one to California, we linked up with this band called the Delirians from East Los Angeles, East LA. These kids, like, there's something in the water and they just rip. And I befriended a bunch of them. We were buddies. We would drink every night and party and hang out. And they were doing that next Echoes tour, the one the year after. And, you know, Jason Lawless called me a couple days before and was like, "Yo, do you want to do this tour?" I'm like, "Yeah, when does it start?" He's like, "In 2 days, you need to get on a plane tomorrow." So I said, "Fuck it." Like, you know, again, I was all about traveling. I still am, you know. And so I just went. And, you know, the second I saw Joe from the Delirians, the bassy, I was like, "Yo, you want to write some songs? I got like 10 days at the end of this tour in California, in LA." And I've never spent that much time in LA prior to moving there. Like, it's always been a couple days here and there. Like, you know, the longest was maybe 4 or 5 days. And, but it's always been gigs and running around and like, so I basically was there for like 10 days and I said, "Fuck it. Let's try and crank out some tunes." And, you know, I think I left LA with like 7 or 8 tunes. And then I went back to New York, you know, back to like, I think I immediately left on that, the Hub City tour. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was like,
that's right. Because yeah, when you were over, you were anxious. You were like, you gotta check out the stuff that we just did.
Yeah. I just got the email with the mixes in like that day. I showed you a couple tunes that day. Yeah. You're probably still sitting on your computer.
Probably.
You know, highest bidder gets them, right?
That's right. Yeah. they're gonna be worth tons when I bet
you my mother will offer you $5.
Yeah, I'll put them up on Craigslist.
Yeah. But yeah, so I ended up tracking with these guys, and you know, the next time, you know, I had the Fast Four record done or almost done, like ready to get mixed, and it was sitting there, and you know, it's still sitting there, but it was sitting there, and I was like, "All right, let's try and put these two as like a full." I'll put the Fast Four stuff and the East LA stuff, the East Los 3 stuff with Joe and Tony and Angel from the Delirians, Adolfo, a couple of the cats from out there, whoever was around. I was like, "All right, fuck it. I'll make a chipwich of it, like East and West, like." And I hated both the records. Like, I hated them as a whole. I was like, "What the fuck is this?" It sat like that for about a month and a half, 2 months before I was like, "I got to separate these again and re-listen to it."
What particularly did you not like about those?
It was super New York and super LA. There was like polar opposites. Like LA, I was talking with a bunch of guys in the studio the other day about this. Like New York, everybody's pretty much on the beat and it's played more aggressive, more two-tone in a sense. Mm-hmm. Like two-tones more punk rock, everything's like right on. And LA, like you listen to Hepcat, like in Stubborn All-Stars, they'll be playing the same, like they're both playing a song, they're both, you know, no offense, like, you know, trying to rip like this one Jamaican tune, and Hepcat will sound a little more behind.
Uh-huh.
and New York is on the beat. I think it has to do with like how people walk. In New York, we walk fast, right? And mm-hmm. LA, everybody like smells the roses a little bit. And it was just like, you know, the LA stuff was super groovy and funky and laid back, and we were, you know, taking an hour to walk a block, and the New York stuff was like, yo, I gotta be in Midtown in 5 minutes and I'm in Brooklyn. Like, right. I gotta fucking go.
And I like that theory. I like that that pace of life theory, West versus East.
You know, and like Chicago's a little bit in the middle. Texas, like what the Bandaloos are doing is like they're taking, you know, you can definitely like, I know Jeremy, like I love him to death. Like he's definitely taking New York influence, but playing more West Coast. Mm-hmm. You know, same with like Deals and Greenroom, like they're definitely taking influence from both East and West, but I feel like they're dragging a little more West, mm-hmm. you know? But I don't know. That's just my weird theory on American ska.
I think you got something there. I mean, yeah. I'm gonna definitely listen to all this stuff with fresh ears.
Check it out. Like, yeah. It's, you know, it's weird. Like, we were sitting in the studio figuring this out, and like, it was like we were running Something Someday, mm-hmm. the version on the EP. We played that. We did like six or seven ska tunes in a day. It was me, Juan Cardenas from the Hard Times, Eric and Joe from the Delirians, and Chris Murray. Chris Murray came and hung out for today.
Oh, cool.
So we were doing like, it was already planned to be straight ska because we didn't cut any ska on the record yet, mm-hmm. and on the sessions. Like, so we just start ramming these ska tunes out. And I wrote all the chord charts and I was playing guitar at first. And I was playing guitar and like, it was way more New York style just from how I play guitar. Mm-hmm. It's a little more aggressive. It's more like of the Joe Strummer sense, of the Clash sense of playing guitar, where it's like a little more punk rock driven. And, you know, my instead of doing that typical like Jamaican, like chenka, 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 I'm doing a more rock steady thing or a more rock and roll thing.
Sure.
You know, like lifting up a finger and turning into this weird, you know, basically a Springsteen chord, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. So like we're doing this, and then like an hour later, Chris rolls out, and I was like, oh, fuck it, I'll play piano. Chris, you want to play guitar? Yeah, cool. Sounds good. And we're playing the same songs, and they're like, literally, like the tempo is way slower, and the groove is, it's more, everything's like, you know, again, like a completely slower pace and more in the back pocket, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just, I think that's my fucking weird theory. It's all about how you walk.
So, if you, your instincts seem to be East Coast, for lack of a better term, but, you're playing on this new EP with the East Lost 3. This is, West Coast stuff. This is that laid back feeling, right? So, mm-hmm. which do you prefer now? I mean, now you've got a taste of both worlds.
I love playing with the Fast Four. I still do, with Danny and Jesse and Vito. And I love playing with the Snails. The Snails have this heart that, like, you know, they're going to do something. They're going to keep working until they'll get to this point where they want to be. Mm-hmm. And now, like, you know, I've you know, sat in with the Bandulus and with the, you know, I've jumped up with enough cats that, like, I love the West Coast in the sense that, like, with Joe and Juan, who's another New Yorker, with Joe and Juan, the way we work is, like, we'll show up and, like, bounce these stupid ideas up, like, up against each other. And, like, basically, we track, like, 30 tunes, a little more than 30 tunes. And I think three or four of those songs were premeditative. Like, everything was on the fly, like, going through, like, my notebook. Mm-hmm. And, like, of, like, you know, I write folk songs and, like, Americana songs and, like, blues songs and shit like that all the time. And I was just flipping through, like, all right, like, I'll write stories, like, about, like, Lorimer on the EP is, like, a story.
Yeah.
I was hanging out with my friend on Bedford Avenue, and we were walking towards Lorimer Street, which is where I was working. We're drunk, we're trying to get food. And, you know, we walked up past Union Avenue where there's, where the, you know, the people rise from the subway lines. Like, mm-hmm. you know, she was blabbering about like her boyfriend, like, what's his name? Like, you know, but like that tune was like, me and Joe were like, all right, let's cut like a Ken Booth style skinhead tune, you know? And I was like, yeah, but we got to do the bells, like on like those classic Ken Booth tunes.
Right.
And of course we didn't have bells, so it's like this great out of tune piano that's like just perfectly in tune but perfectly out of tune. With like the weird major minor, like it's got a weird like music nut. He was trying to explain to me that like what I played was perfectly fine even though it was the complete wrong, like it was a major on a minor, and the way the piano was out of tune made it work.
You know, I got the pleasure to listen to your EP this afternoon, and I listened to that track a couple times because I'm like, am I hearing that right? And it's like, it, for whatever reason, that fits.
Yeah.
And I don't even know why.
The song is like a weird, it's like, you know, I guess A minor to G.
Yeah.
And then at the end, it's like A major to G or some A major to G minor. And we just, we played the same thing over and it just fucking fit.
Yeah.
And we like, thinking about like, should we change it? Should we cut it? Should we edit it? And we were like, no, it sounds like it's a, like, a weird Jamaican record. Like, no, are you crazy? Like, that's it.
There's all sorts of, you know, if you listen to like that some of those old Jamaican classics and stuff, there's some strange, you know, like coincidences or like some weird, you know, not glitches, but just things that happened during the recording session that never, you know, was never cleaned out. It was just, that's what makes that music. So yeah, I like it because it forced me to kind of like really be absorbed into the song, be like really listen critically to it, and I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, it does fit. Like that's
we were
cool.
Talking about it, like that's like that part on the whole record that I feel people would whistle.
Yeah,
like it's because it's a little off and it's just a little weird, and we're like, you know, you think about songs like about like for me and like you know all the East Coast guys like. You know, we definitely make jokes about making huge tunes or like big tunes or whatever, but like mm-hmm. me and Joe especially seem to work in the sense of like if you don't catch yourself humming back what you just did or singing back, or like if we don't get a text message from one another saying, yo, I've had that hook in Lorimer or that hook in that or that stuck in my head or that little guitar part, like then that song's not really worth it.
Sure.
You are your biggest fan, right?
You should be. You should be the most into your own, you know, works.
You know, so, you know, we're our biggest fans in the sense that, like, we're writing these tunes and, like, we're like, oh, well, that tune came out really good, but what can we do to change it? And that's why we have, like, a rock city cut of a tune and a skinhead cut or a ska cut and a early reggae cut. Like, mm-hmm. We have these different versions because we're like, oh, it'll be cool, but what if we speed it up a little bit, the same progression, and make that rock city rhythm a skinhead rhythm? You know,
it sounds to me that process is really kind of experimental and kind of lets you guys, you know,
toy with
the sound a little bit, you know, no matter what, and in the end, you'll come up with the right sound.
You know, and I think between this weird board they have at the Steady Rock Easy Groove Factory, best longest studio name ever, like ever. I feel like how we're recording is it's very very lo-fi. It's usually one condenser mic on the drums and that's it. Hmm. And we do everything track by track because we don't have a proper interface. We're doing very very DIY home recordings on like a straight up like East Los bootlegged version of like the PC version of GarageBand.
Sure.
Like everything is super like the computer. Like I feel like whenever I plug in like a USB cable to like bounce tunes down, I feel like the fucking computer is going to explode. And there's just this weird thing in the board about how like it's literally like a PA that we're like, you know, using the line out into the line into the computer and running into this program. But
I feel like that's how I record this show.
It's basically probably how you're doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You have that little like four channel recorder or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The four channel PA head.
Yep.
Yep.
That's how we're doing
it. Basically how we're doing it, except we're using a 16 channel. or an 8-channel or some shit like that.
Yeah, we're just that's some inside baseball talk for fans of the show. That's how I record this show.
Set up in the living room. I've snuggled with that little mixer many a nights.
Yeah, yeah.
I find myself always in the corner, that like corner on the floor whenever I'm at your house.
It's a good corner, man. I mean,
I always, you know, I figure like I'm a friend. I should always get the couch. I never get the couch at your house,
man. You know, it is really, it's like Lord of the Flies after those shows. I mean, it's like a free for all. I mean,
I guess I'm always the one like that's like, fuck it, let's hang out until the sun comes up.
Right. Yeah. You could claim the couch, but you wouldn't be in it for very long anyway.
No, I could claim it, and the second I got up to hang out, like, yep. You guys would be sleeping in it, or you know.
Yeah, I love it. I love it when no matter what group you're with, I mean, I want you to keep coming back to Minnesota because it's like it's an excuse to open up my home, you know. And we made a joke last time. You're like my Midwest mama. You make sure that I got a roof over my head and some food in my belly. And I'm like, you know, just a little bit of Minnesota hospitality for you.
Yeah, I'm all right with it. I'll keep coming if you keep, you know, making sure there's some. What the hell do we always get? What was that gas station that has like a? I don't know. As long as we can have a po' boy beforehand at the gig.
Yeah, yeah.
And as long as we can stop at that gas station and get crappy beer. As long as I can keep icing people with the stale Smirnoff ice in your fridge.
Gross.
Who did I get? Did I get Aaron?
Yes, I think you did.
I got Aaron, yeah. And he was furious.
Well, I remember when it happened. I was shocked. I was like, people still do that, huh? Like, yeah, that's still a thing.
Still assholes. You know, we're still jerks.
No, that's cool. So when does this EP become generally available to everybody?
To special people, we're going to do, I'm going to have a limited amount of copies of the EP and the, there's a 7-inch too that's coming out with the Big Ska Gamble.
Oh, nice.
Brian Polk's thing. So I'll have those on the 22nd at the Slackers Holiday Show. So, which is like basically the New York record release show and, you know, me going back to California for a long time show. And then we're going to launch on this new thing called Big Tunes, which is Tom Gibbons over at Wadebsky Records' brainchild.
Okay.
He wanted to do a Kickstarter type site where the whole order, everything is... it's all in-house. So it's basically Kickstarter. We're going to launch the full-length record, Love Letters, which is going to come out on Valentine's Day in 2013. So we're going to launch that. You'll be able to buy the EP. You can, you know, there's all the funny Kickstarter benefits. There's going to be some form of drinking Jaeger bombs, having a Jaeger bomb off with me, and all the... like the record cover, I broke my Telecaster.
Uh-oh.
About 6 months ago. And like, I was losing it one day and I just broke my guitar. But I've written almost every song that I've ever written on that guitar. So yeah, you know, like, you know how Kickstarter has all those funny benefit things, like,
sure, it's like, yeah,
you can buy
date with the bass player, certainly.
Yeah, basically, like, I'm not gonna come over to your mother's house and cook you dinner, but you can buy, like, you know, if you pay whatever the money is, you get everything, and then I'll give you the neck of my Telecaster, which is like, you know, the guitar I've been playing since I was 11 years old, and it's got a lot of memories.
I like that. That's very sentimental. I'm surprised that you're able to part with such a relic.
Yeah, you know, I'm keeping the body and the pickup.
There you go.
You know, it's a nice limited Mexican swamp ash made in Mexico, American parts. It's a Texican.
Yeah.
Maple fretboard. You know, it'll do you good. I'm keeping the tuners, but you can have everything else. I gotta rebuild that Telecaster this year because I'm Mr. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're going to do this Kickstarter on Big Tunes, which is like where the Slackers did that the question repress.
That's right. They just had that campaign. I think they were successful, and yeah, they're doing a limited repress of the question.
Mm-hmm.
One of their best albums, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a good one. But so it's going to be through that same website, bigtune.es, Big Tunes.
Okay.
You can, you know, there'll be the EP, there'll be the 45. I'm going to do like a limited silkscreen cover that, like, you know, if you donate $25, you'll get that or whatever. There'll be a CD and an LP for Love Letters up there for sale, for pre-order. The EP, I'm sure if, you know, I got that Fast 4 record sitting there, that might come out somehow through that. So
nice.
You might be able to catch something like that in there. You know, Jaeger Bomb contest. But all in all, I get to put out a record.
I think you're one of those guys that has like that engine that just doesn't turn off. You know what I mean? It just keeps going. And I wonder where all that comes from. Like, what drives you to keep writing and keep making and keep recording and, you know, keep touring and, like, don't you
everybody
just want to just, like, sit back and relax?
No, everybody hates me. So I just try and shut people up with music as of now. But, no, I'm kidding. I don't know, man. I'm a working dude. I like to work. And I don't like to have days off and be not productive. And, you know, over the last 3 months, I haven't worked a job. I just started working again like this week at a club in New Jersey as a temporary bouncer. Like, other than that, like, if you don't want to count.
So you were in Jersey for, you know, a few weeks, and you still managed to pick up a job.
I picked up a job. I'm playing a show. I'm going to cut some tunes out here with some people, and I'm going to do like 7 or 8 shows of the Slackers, something like that.
Never a missed opportunity with you, it seems like.
But I'm not going to be home for Christmas, which is like the most ridiculous part. I fly back a couple days before Christmas.
You're a nut, man.
Yeah. That's how I roll.
I like it. Well, that just means that you're going to have more
75 degree and sunny days. Yes, that's what that means.
Well, that's true. You're gonna have better weather for sure. But like, I think that it's awesome. I mean, for those that have enjoyed your work in the past, and hopefully enjoy this new EP that you got more coming. It seems like you got nothing but stuff ahead of you.
I like to have fun and enjoy myself, and I've enjoyed myself a little too much over the past couple of years, so I don't enjoy myself as much as I do. So I enjoy being in a room with 3 or 4 people or 2 people or whoever's there and just making music. And the fact that we can write a rhythm or a tune and be like, fuck it, let's record it and then re-record and then, you know, cut another tune 5 minutes later, like, oh, how about this? Like, literally, like, one day at one of these sessions, like, within a half hour, we had, like, 4 or 5 rhythms written and recorded, like, all the drums and, like, the bass in, like, an hour.
They just were coming. How is that possible? I mean, well, is it the guys that you're working with? Is it just...
I don't like...
Timing or what?
No, I just feel like with takes, like, the best take you're going to do is your first take. Right?
Well, usually, yeah.
You're going to sit in before you overanalyze it. Like, see, like New York City. Like, I'm not trying to make fun of every New York band. But, you know, not even New York City. Every city has a band, like, playing this kind of music. And they sit on these records. Like, they'll make a record and they'll want to make it perfect.
Right. Well, yeah.
And, like, flawless. And, like, what I sat in... sort of realize is, like, you know, with the music that we're influenced by, like Jamaican music, we'll say Studio One, Scatterlights, you know, mm-hmm. or Motown, like with the Funk Brothers, like those guys had like 2 or 3 takes to cut a tune that they never fucking heard before. Right.
Right.
And if, like, I know with Motown, what did they say? If you couldn't do it in 3 takes, they threw out the tune and the next day they try it again.
Like, that's what I've heard, you know, and I like that.
I got three takes, and that's it. And most of the time, like, we'll write it and do it in one.
I remember hearing a story about that the band The Bronx. And I think that, like, their first album, they were like, yeah, we cut the album really quick because we said we no more than three takes, and whatever we got in three, that's all we need. And they just moved on. And it was, I really enjoyed that record. I really liked it.
Yeah, I feel like that, like, you know, granted, like, with previous bands I've been in, like, you know, like, so Forthrights, we cut three records, like three full lengths. Mm-hmm. And there was only 11 songs or 12 songs that came out, like not even a full length's worth. And again, like, you are a fan, you are your biggest fan. I love those records. I love the way Jack wrote. I love the way the rhythms came out, like 90% of the time.
Is, like, it just a creative decision at that point?
It's a creative decision. Yeah. It's, you know, a bunch of people saying, well, what about this? Like, nah, the piano just wasn't right there, or the sound of the snare, or, you know, every band you play in, like, I'm sure you're that way with the Prize Fighters, right? Like,
I think recording.
I've been trying to, like, get the solo sound right for how long? Like, you know, like.
Well, and I think it boils down to personalities, too. I mean, some people are more kind of like, whatever happened in that moment is the best thing that's going to happen. And mm-hmm. some people are very, very particular. You know, the way that Prize Fighters do their stuff is kind of a little both, but it's we do spend a lot of time. Well, we listen to a lot of Jamaican music first, and then it's like, you know, making sure that we get it right, you know. And you could say that it's a lot of time spent and there's a lot of wasted effort, but we really like what happens at the, you know, and there's a result. And I think it's definitely a personality thing.
Yeah, like, I'm sorry, I'm looking at, like, the tunes, like, about takes, like, Something Someday, every track on that, mm-hmm. with the exception of, I think, the piano and the harmonies, was the first take. Like, there's no way, like, I think we maybe had to punch in once on guitar,
mm-hmm.
but, like, you know, maybe that's all first takes. Like, My Babe was such a, the only thing I think we recut was, like, the organ. I played the organ like crap the first time. We're sitting like, this is terrible. Like, what the fuck did you do? Like, tones, whatever. So we recut. But literally, like, you know, Lorimer, everything was just about a first take. Like, vocals, I took a little more time on that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still pitchy on it, but, like, Bye Bye, like, you know, we took a little more time on that, like, but yeah, for the most part, like, we don't like to sit. I don't like to sit and think about things,
right?
Because your original ridiculous idea that could be, you know, mildly offensive, or, you know, maybe I shouldn't sing a song about, you know, this girl that I genuinely love that I could never love, or, like, you know, should we really be covering Little Walter? Like, yeah. Or, like, you know, like, the more you sit and think about it, the less you'll want to do.
You can talk yourself out of it. Yeah, I definitely can see that.
I got one word for you, bro. YOLO. YOLO.
Sammy.
You only got one take, right? That's what YOLO stands for?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I'll have to ask our Twitter followers.
Yoga. You only got one take.
Yogurt.
That's the new thing. Everybody, it's fucking on. Hashtag it every day.
Yeah. I got an interesting story that when we were Prize Fighters were just in the studio, because we're going to be releasing a 7-inch set a set of 3 7-inches coming out next year. But
awesome.
It was just one of those things where we rewrote a horn line for an old song of ours, and we just wrote it, like, kind of on the spot, and we took one take of it, and it sounded good, and we didn't want to monkey with it, like what you're saying, so we kept it in there. And Aaron started telling us the story about how apparently when they recorded the track Simmer Down, mm-hmm. and I think it was the Wailers.
Yeah,
and yeah, so they had Don Drummond come in and to do the horn line for the opening of the song, yeah. And, like, he literally just came in, came into the studio, they did the first, the beginning, they do that intro, and like that's really all they do horn-wise and the rest of the song. As soon as he was done with that take, or as soon as he's done with, you know, playing that intro, he like put his horn in his case and walked out of the studio before they were even done, completed with like the length of the song.
I heard that story a couple of times too.
I just think that's amazing. You
know,
that's like
that's kind of how, like, you know, we're not as cool as Don Drummond, you know.
But well, we're also not as crazy as he is too, though.
You know, I disagree. I know some crazy people playing this kind of music, you know. But that's how I like to work. Is just like, yo, we'll bat it out of the, like, we'll just try and see what happens, and something will happen, and it'll be either all right, or it'll be great, or it'll be a fucking big tune.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we all criticize all these records, and we all have the best record collection, right? We're all better than the next guy. So that if you can judge what's the biggest Ken Booth tune, you can obviously judge what your biggest tune is, right?
Sure.
So that's like how we're just like, all right, fuck it. Like, if I found this at a record store and I bought it, like, as a 45, like, then it's a good tune.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
What's your favorite tune on the EP?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I know it's hard because it's like saying, you know, what's your favorite child, or, you know.
You know, Lorimer is very dear to my heart. It's about one of my favorite people. One of my best friends. Bye Bye was written by Joe and Angel. Or sorry, Joe and Tony. Angel took the second verse. I took the first verse. And that tune was just one of those days that we're like, this is a tune. Like, this is like an old tune that, like, this is great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Joe was really hesitant about, you know, Joe sings on Maybe, which is like the fourth or fifth track on the EP. And Joe wrote that for me to sing. And like a couple weeks ago, he was like, 2 weeks ago, maybe, he was like, you know, I don't know if I want to have you sing that song. And I'm like, I was really bummed because I was falling in love with it. Like, it's a great tune. And I was getting anxious and eager to sing it. He's like, you know, let me take a crack at it. And I said, man, can we split it? Like, can I sing the second half? Like, something like. And, you know, he was like, yeah, this tune is like very near and dear to me. And I was like, all right, take it, bro. And when it came down the other day, right before I left, we like looked at all the tunes and figured out what ones we wanted to be on the EP and what wasn't going to be on the LP and what would carry over.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yo, Maybe needs to be on this record.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Maybe I'll Take You Back. And it's, that might be one of my favorites.
I think it was a good choice. I think, you know, like listening to the EP this afternoon, I like that. I like the style of his voice. It's textured different. Your voice has got a little grit to it, and his is real.
A little more cleaner.
Yeah,
a little more
pretty. It's clean. Yeah. So to have both of your vocals kind of on that track, really, yeah. I really like that. I really like that.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that one.
I gotta say, just having you in front of the mic. On, you know, like, I'm not used to hearing you, you know what I mean? Like, when you were at the Fourth Rights, you were, you know, there was
a bass, vocal work. It's, yeah. Yes, I was playing organ, like, yeah, man, you just, you know, blame everybody for doubting me. That sounded really mean. Can we cut?
Whatever, dude.
Blame everybody for being fucking assholes. Sorry, cut. Nah, man, I
think your personality comes through in your vocal style, and I think what's that's awesome.
A fifth of whiskey and a pack of Marlboro Reds?
There's a bit of old soul to you that I don't know. While your bass work is good, I gotta say, it's like, I don't know, your personality comes more through your vocal and your lyrics and all that.
Yeah, you know, I definitely enjoy being a front man more than being in the back. But at times, I definitely enjoy being in the back, you know.
Knowing your place. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm still like picking like what is my favorite tune on the EP, man? I don't know. I kind of love everyone the most. I love all of them, you know. I guess See You Soon might be my favorite. I'm like thinking about like the stories behind the tunes and like where they lay in my heart and in my like where they are on my sleeve, you know.
Mm-hmm. There are different ways to like songs, you know. It's like some are more fun to play, some are like mean more to you, like, but may not be that fun to play, you know.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, man, I wasn't gonna talk about the secret track.
Yeah.
At the end of it, you know, what's supposed to be track 7, See You Soon. I bought a guitar in Fort Collins, Colorado at a guitar center. The guitar didn't make the tour. The airport broke it.
Oh, no.
It still kind of plays, but it's a little, you know, jacked up now. It was that little acoustic that I was walking around with basically every time you've seen me since I bought it. It's like a little three-quarter, like, I think I paid like $100 for it. But I got that guitar. I was saying before about, you know, you don't write songs. Songs are in the wood.
Mm-hmm.
Like some fucking voodoo shit. Like, I bought that guitar and I took it home. At the time was like, you know, the Best Western of Fort Collins, Colorado. It was probably a Motel 6 now thinking about it. But that song just, you know, I started playing it. And, you know, I started writing that song on the airplane. I was coming home from New Orleans, like basically just about at the end of my time with the Fort Wrights. And I was coming home and it was the day they, you know, at two, I had the 6 in the morning flight or the 5 in the morning flight. And at 2 in the morning, they raided Zuccotti Park for Occupy.
Oh.
And that's like where that song came from. And I was living in that neighborhood at the time and was living real close to there. And then I was thinking about the girl I was seeing at the time who I was living with and everybody I met along the way on tour and how I'll always say, see you soon.
Mm-hmm.
That's always been like, you know, sort of like my see you soon, you know? Cause I genuinely sincerely mean that when I say it. And, I think that might be my favorite tune. Like, and, you know, it's granted the secret track and it's like this folk, very, you know, I was trying to write a Dylan song or a Woody Guthrie song or a early Springsteen song. Like, I was trying to write one of these super Americana tunes and it just sort of plopped out. And we've tried both with the, basically every band I played and we've tried to make that some form of Jamaican. It just doesn't, it'll never be a Jamaican song.
Yeah.
Event influence or soul tune. It's just, that's what it is.
So that's yeah. That's its ultimate destination is just to be
the that, secret yeah. track on an EP.
Yeah.
That,
you know, but yes, it'll be your favorite.
It's, I feel like that tune's ultimate destination was the last thing you'll hear on the EP.
Nice.
And,
are you guys going to be, touring behind this? Is this a project where you're just going to be recording and be putting out?
Do you really think I'm not going to tour on anything, Courtney?
I knew the answer before I asked it, but I figured I would.
I am going to be touring on this, whether it's with the East Los 3 or the Snails or the Fast 4. I don't know. I don't know which, you know, basically everybody I play music with is called for lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
Like the New York guys, like one of the reasons the Fast 4 never really played, like Jesse and Vito are busy with Broadcaster and Royal City Riot. Danny's learning, he's just got his tattoo apprenticeship from what I know. Like that's why we never really played like that or toured like that.
Mm-hmm.
They all had these, you know, Broadcaster was number one for them, which is great. They're killing it. They still are. They're gonna have a really good year. You know, and, you know, with L.A., like, Juan is a working man and, you know, he's my fellow New Yorker out there. And, you know, Joe, I feel like Joe and those kids, the Delirium side of crew would be game to tour and gig on it. But I don't want to take them away from the Deliriums. Right. I don't want to be a homewrecker because the Deliriums have this momentum, and the way they play and the way they can walk into any room and turn it into this big party is just – those boys, there's something in the water in East L.A., and those boys are drinking it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what band I would tour with, I'm not sure. It'd probably be a little bit of everybody, whoever wants to go and whoever's available to go. But I am planning to go out for a good chunk of the spring and summer. I am planning to tour with who, I don't know yet.
Okay.
But
I wonder, will that take you back to the Midwest here? Will we get to see you finally perform again here?
I will be in the Midwest for sure. There's no doubt about that. I will be in the Midwest. I've always loved the Midwest. Minneapolis, Chicago, you know, I might not go back to Indianapolis, but don't tell nobody.
Pretty wild. We're actually playing down in Des Moines, and that place is kind of crazy.
At the Gas Lamp? Where are you guys playing?
Yeah, play at the Gas Lamp.
The Gas Lamp is fucking awesome. Yeah, and but, so is...
It's just interesting. It's interesting because we've got three Minneapolis bands are on the bill of like there's like five bands on the bill, but the three of them are from MN Ska, and they're it's like we're uprooting camp.
Rise Spiders, Drop Steppers, and
Rocksteady Breakfast.
See, that's the one I don't think I've ever seen them.
I don't think you've really seen
the Drop Steppers either.
They're kind of the same. Sort of like, they're less ska. They're more like reggae, rocksteady sort of vibe to them. But Rocksteady Breakfast is straight up like two-tone ska punk. It's just in your face and bilingual and amazing.
That's all right.
Yeah. Des Moines is so cool. So we're gonna be doing more Midwest stuff, you know, coming up soon too.
Is that scooter rally?
They're calling it the Fistful of Ska. It's, the Skins down there. Like they have their own, club or whatever.
What's the lead boss Skin down there? His name? There's I saw him on this guy is, you know, he's great. And I can't remember his name right now, but the first time I met him, he introduced me as his wife. And I had a civil conversation with his wife, and he came up to me 5 minutes later and was like, "Yo, man. Are you trying to pick up my wife?"
Yeah, it's a blast down there, man. Those guys are insane.
I played there, I guess, with Hub City and Agros, and it was just like, that was the night that everybody threw up on that tour.
Nice.
Everybody puked. I think I was the only one, but I puked a couple days before that, so I was taking it easy. I'm sorry, Mom. My mom is probably upstairs. I'm staying at my mother's house.
Nice.
She's probably like, "Why are you shouting about you puking?"
Nice.
I'm like, "Well, sorry, Mom."
Yeah, cat's out of the bag.
We did three shows with the Agros, and it was like the end of the Midwest run, and we were just going to Texas and then going home. And for some reason, that was the night that everybody knew we had a 5-hour drive that we needed to start. It was a long drive. We're going to New Mexico or some shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody was like, "All right, Travis will do the 5 hours or whatever," because he would always drive. And, everybody will have a couple drinks so we can just pass out in the van, right? And, that led to, everybody threw up. One guy threw up, and then the next guy was like, "Yo, if you throw up, I'm going to throw up." And it was like that classic comedy chain of events.
Yeah.
And we all threw up, I think.
I saw a bunch of pictures from that party. There was a lot of those Agrolite guys. They just looked like they were having an absolute blast with Jason and a bunch of those. For those that don't know, there's a crew down there, and the one guy opens up his garage, and his garage is their party. That's the Rude Boy Bar and Grill is what they call it, and it's just his garage where he works out and parties with a bunch of his scooter buddies. After shows, basically. And, man, I've had way too many good times there, but it's like it's just interesting that Des Moines, of all places, that's the good times right there.
Yeah, Des Moines is good. Des Moines is always good, now thinking about it.
Yeah, I've not had a bad show there. And I've played
never
it really
bad night in Des Moines. I think I've had like little arguments in Des Moines with like whatever band I was out with, but like every time Des Moines is like there's certain cities you go to that I find myself going to, at least, that like you'd assume it'd be like this terrible club or whatever. Like we thought that the first time we went out there, and we played like the show, the Scooter Alley, and we had a fucking blast.
Yeah.
Like Fort Wayne, Indiana is like that, the Brass Rail. Like we pulled up and we thought this is, you know, like no offense to Johnny Camarado and the rest of the Brass Rail guys, Corey. Like I thought it was going to be the worst show on the tour, and I have not booked a tour that hasn't, like if I'm playing, like we are at the rail no matter what. Like if it's a Monday, if it's a Saturday, if it's a Friday, whatever, like
yeah.
The rail is kind of like I don't know. It's like if you're in Chicago and you don't go to the Cobra Lounge and hang out for a minute,
mm-hmm.
like you just always end up there. I've never tried to book anywhere else in Fort Wayne besides the rail because of how awesome the rail is.
It's so important though, like to have those moments where, you know, like when you do go around and you tour and you play these places and you have these like amazing shows and like just amazing times and moments on tour. It's like, You take notes. You're like you're like, hey, when I'm gonna do a tour, that's I remember having a blast there. We're going there again, you know. And
yeah.
I feel like a lot of business is done that way.
Mm-hmm. And like you sort of, you know, you befriend the owner. Like I get a phone call from them like every 3 months or something like that, just saying, hey, how you doing? Like, when are you coming back?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like one of the best things. And there's a handful of clubs, like, you know, I don't tour as often as other bands, but I've toured enough that I have a little reputation, like a little friendship with certain people at every club.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like they know me and they know, like when I show up, like it's going to be a fun night and we're going to goof off and catch up. And, you know, if I was rich, I'd take you out for a steak dinner, you know?
Well, maybe that's part of the appeal. That's why you've found your home on the road anyway. I mean, like making those connections.
See, yeah. Or just, you know,
tying it all together here.
You have these stories with that. Like you could tell somebody and they'll never fucking believe you. Like, you know, Minneapolis, what was it? The first time I came out, like how drunk everybody was.
That was strange yet awesome. Like it was
how many beers did we end up stealing from that club? Like if we really say the amount of beers that if I remember right that we took from that club,
it was like somewhere like 30. It was like
we went to a bar with like 15 people and they shouted last call, so everybody ordered like 4 beers.
Yeah,
and we just pocketed all of them open,
right?
And we ran to the van and like you know, if we really tell people the whole story, they'll be like, you're a fucking liar. Like that shit did not happen.
It was nuts. I did not foresee that happening, and I'm kind of glad. And it was like this moment where it's like these guys are here and it's a good time. Might as well like show them. Oh yeah, this bar is open. It's like, oh yeah, let's clean them out.
Yeah, let's clean them out and then leave.
And then hightail it out of there. And then
let's ask them for every Miller High Life they have, and then get the fuck out.
And then go home and demolish a fucking Crave case from White Castle.
I believe that was just me and who ate that? Was that me and Aaron?
And me, I was there too.
Yeah, you were there.
It was the three of us because, like, oh, you guys went together and got it, brought it back to my place.
Yeah, and then, I jumped in their car.
Yeah,
and then, oh, I forgot we had a fucking Crave case that night too.
Well, yeah,
but, I don't know.
But it was all good and crazy and fun. So I'm hoping that we can make more memories like that, Sammy. And
we got some good ones.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, for those that are listening, like, you know, hopefully you come through a town, you know, near some of our listeners, and then they can, you know, they can make their own Sammy K memories.
Yeah, memories. that's that. You know, that's the glory of tour. I think really is the people you meet on, you know, their own home turf or whatever, and you hang out and you bro down, you become You know, I'm sorry for like the super hardcore terms, but like you bro down, you get these people that you see, you know, realistically you should be seeing them 4 times a year.
Right.
You know, some years it's more. Like, I think I've seen you like 4 or 5 times this year.
Yeah, it's been a
while. Been to Minneapolis 4 or 5 times this year, which is like more than I usually get to Minneapolis, you know? It's just like, you know, the cats, you know, every city has like those couple people you see at every show and you befriend. And, you know, that's why I look down on Facebook and wonder why I have 2,000 friends. And I'm like, oh, yeah, what the fuck is up? Like, so-and-so from fucking so-and-so. Like, you know, it ain't about the Facebook friends, but it's about those stories of like.
Yeah, behind each one of those friends, though, it's like you're like, oh yeah, I met them at this place, at this, you know, at this show, or yeah, they helped me.
And we went and got dinner after the show, and I hung out with them until the sun came up, and then, you know, I went back to the van and got in the van, and we went to the next show. And the next time you go to that city, you're going to do the same fucking thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's these memories, these stories, these, you know.
I mean, that's kind of why I talk to you know, artists like you. I enjoy sharing those stories, you know, and like learning about them, you know.
We will. I'm not an artist, number one. Oh, okay. I'm just a fool. That's why you talk to fools.
Can't it be like, both?
I don't know about that.
No?
I don't know about that.
Well, you got Sammy K in the East Lost 3.
Los, bro. Where are you from? Minneapolis?
Sorry, that's what we would. That's I should say it in the most Minnesotan accent I can. Let's see here.
East Lost.
Sammy K and the East Lost 3? I don't know.
That is super Minneapolis. Yeah.
But East Lost 3.
East Lost.
You got, like, you got the you got the EP coming out very soon. And then
December 22nd.
December 22nd. And then Valentine's Day, February 14th. You can expect the full length coming out.
Love Letters. If all goes well via Big Tunes.
Big Tunes. Yeah, Big so Tunes. Stay tuned to our website. We'll be promoting that when it comes out. And as always, Sammy, it's like a pleasure to have you on. And I love like catching up with you.
I feel like I started talking to you like 10 minutes ago, and it's been like an hour and a half, bro.
I know. Where does the goddamn time go?
We just, you know, it's just catching up.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. So for Sammy K and his East Lost 3, I've been your host, Courtney Close, and we're saying skank on.
Skank on, bro.
Yeah, you're gonna be something someday. Yeah, you're gonna be something someday. Hey, you got your daddy's old suit and that secondhand shirt, and trying to be like Saga Lee, yeah, winning every little hat that you see. You gonna be a something a someday. Hey, you gonna be a something a someday. Hey, oh, you got that attitude, something like that PMA. You're always in the right mind, yeah. Everything is always gonna go your way. You gonna be a something a someday. Hey, you gonna be a something a someday. Hey, oh yeah, you pray to old St. Joe with all of your working class woes. You think it's kind of funny, yeah, you're turning that rebellion into money. We'll be right back.
Something someday. Hey, hey, you're gonna be.